Blog Talk Radio.
Hey neighbor, Ace is the place for craftsmen. This 4th of July weekend, for 4 days only, choose from a variety of craftsman products, like a tool.
Sorry. Sorry about that.
I'm really happy to be here.
Good evening and welcome to A Real Point of View. My name is Greg Morgan. I am your host. I'm also known as the Real Movie Guy. Joining me tonight are the movie maven, Miss Karen D., and the illustrious Mr. Larry Domkowski of Must See Movies on Facebook. And we're internet critics talking about the movies. Welcome and glad that you were able to join us, ladies and gentlemen. How you doing, Larry?
And it's great. Got a beautiful day today. Got a son who decides he actually does like playing baseball, and everything looks good.
That sounds good. How about you, Karen? How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm very happy to be here.
But are you happy to be here?
I'm really happy to be here.
Okay, just making sure. Well, tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk about monsters. Now, this is part one of a two-part series. The first part is Monsters of the Atomic Age, and the second part will be next week, and that'll be us talking about Monsters in the Shadows. So let's get to it. Monsters of the Atomic Age. Now, for those of you who don't understand or know what the Atomic Age was, it was back basically in the late 40s, throughout the 50s and even part of the early 60s primarily. This is basically after the atom bomb had been dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki during World War II to end the War in the Pacific. Tonight's show was actually prompted by Larry Domkowski, our must-see movie critic, to talk about the monsters of an age that people have somewhat forgotten. So why don't you kind of give us a little bit more insight and overview, Larry, with regard to these monsters of the Atomic Age. Before I let you jump in, I always love Godzilla, but go ahead.
Well, most of the conversation, I think, tonight is going to be about Godzilla. It's considered probably the first of the great monster films. It came out the original release. I'm going to say that very specifically. The original release came out in 1954 in Japan. It was also then released, a follow-up release, an Americanized version, also in 54, and that was recut, starring. Raymond Burr, but what most people don't know is that to get to be a released film in Japan in the early 50s, it had to go through a board to get it accepted. And actually had to go through two boards. Had to go through a board for the Japanese people, and then had to go through the U.S. Navy. And the U.S. Navy really cut the thing up like crazy. You see, the original film that was submitted to the U.S. Navy was about 3.5 to 4 hours long. And after they got done with it, they got it down to like 98 minutes. I've only met a few people who have seen it. It's only played in the United States back in 1981 or 82, where it made the rounds. It played at the Biograph Theater in Chicago for one night and one night only. It played down a few weeks before that at the U of I. And it played in different places around the country, probably for about one night only. I have not heard of it hitting any theaters in the United States since then. And if you try to look it up, you will not find it. You have to go to the theaters that played it and get the information from them. One place that you might be able to get the information from, if you're looking at it, is from a couple of film schools. Some of the professors have seen it or know about it. And possibly Facets in Chicago, Facets Multimedia. They might be able to steer you in the right direction. Other than that,
so to clarify, we're talking about the long version.
The long version, which is the original one before the censors of the U.S. Navy got to it.
Okay.
The original released versions that we've seen. That, you know, whether if it's Godzilla or Godzilla King of the Monsters, that is what happened after the United States Navy got a hold of it.
Can you tell our listeners why the Navy was involved at all?
Well, I'll tell you, anything that happened in Japan post-World War II, the United States Navy had a thumbs up or thumbs down on it. They were, and... with the original movie, the original uncut version of Godzilla, in the wake of Godzilla, showed live scenes of of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and made a direct connection, and the film made a direct connection to the shame of the Japanese people, and the code of Bushido, and the dishonor that the people who allowed this to happen, who allowed the World War II to happen, who allowed the United States to drop the bomb on them, revenge had to be exacted. And Godzilla is a force of nature sent by the gods to take out its vengeance upon the Japanese people. And it's almost a way for the Japanese people to give them a way to understand what happened at Hiroshima and Nagasaki and other places where they had the firebombs like in Tokyo. And it gave them some substance. But more importantly, it showed horror in a monstrous, in a very dynamic, monstrous way. It's in black and white. It's not in color. Godzilla is clearly wreaking vengeance. One of the big differences between the long version and the versions we're used to is that in the original version, it is unclear if Godzilla, to an American audience, it's unclear if Godzilla is wreaking havoc because he's pissed off because you woke him up from his slumber, or he's going back to become a vehicle for vengeance. Now, in the version after the U.S. Navy censors got a hold of it, this dynamic changes. Godzilla is clearly a monster. He is clearly the bad guy, and he's clearly out to wreak havoc. There is no question about it. It has nothing to do. On the surface, it has nothing to do with Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But remember, Godzilla is woken up by a hydrogen bomb testing in the Pacific Ocean. Mm-hmm. And
guess who's responsible for that?
That's right, the United States. Now, this is something that the censors didn't see. Believe it or not, they really didn't see that. They really didn't see that the U.S. was caused Godzilla. They
mm-hmm.
thought it was, and if they thought that that's what was in there, any reference to the U.S. Having weapons testing in the Pacific Ocean would have been cut out.
I'm surprised they missed that, frankly.
Yeah, so am I. But things do get through, and there now we start getting into something important about the film itself, and why this film has lasted so long. Frankly, any giant monster movie, any atomic monster movie, starts here. It starts with Godzilla. It's a wonderful film. It's shot the original version, I should say, the all Japanese version. It's all done. You're there. You're witnessing this. You're a part of this. When it's Americanized, they remove the audience. Now the audience is being given a description of a lot of things happening through the acting of Raymond Burr. And so we don't see it in the same way. We see it as something that's happening over there rather than something that's happening in my own movie theater.
But let me just interject in here for a second, because I guess to me that's a very key distinction, Larry. I was able to watch both the Japanese original version and the Americanized version, which were both done by the same director, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Hishiro Honda did both of those movies.
Yeah, and he did them well.
I mean, he did a great job on both of them, but the differences between the two movies are very interesting because, I mean, our history as Americans with war is that it's something done over there. It's fought somewhere else. We don't have a history except for the Civil War and the Revolutionary War. We don't have a strong history of fighting wars on our own soil or people coming to our country to take us over or to colonize us or anything like that. Japan has a history as an imperialist aggressor, but also as the subject of aggression and is the subject of having wars fought on its soil. So the Japanese version did feel real, and certainly that viewpoint makes sense because they witnessed the horrors of World War II. It was something, it wasn't something that you read about in a newsreel. It was something that happened to you or your next-door neighbor. There's a really interesting scene that was not in the, I don't believe was in the Americanized version, where people in Tokyo are riding a streetcar or something like that, and one of the guys says, gee, you know, oh, Godzilla, I don't know. I'm really tired of having to deal with all of this, like, you know, panic and running for cover and hiding from bombs and stuff like that. And, we just got done with Nagasaki and Hiroshima. Now we got to deal with this, too. And that didn't show up. I don't believe that showed up in the Americanized version.
You are absolutely correct. And that's why it's important when you see these movies, Karen, is to see both of them. So we see the differences and we see what happened when it was Americanized. Again, the U.S. Navy got heavily involved and said, no, you have to cut these pieces out.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of the things that happened through the visual narrative of the first film was pulled out, and in its place was put Raymond Burr giving a description of sometimes something else.
Right. Right.
And so therefore it meets exactly the model that you just explained on how the United States sees wars. They're all over there. They're not here.
And here's something else that I noticed, too, in the Americanized version, was that they also had dialogue which didn't show up in the Japanese version, where there's, like, Raymond Burr's editor calls him and says something like, well, you know, what's going on? And Raymond Burr tells him, well, you know, I'm trying to track Godzilla. And he's like, huh, okay, well, what's going to happen? What's going to keep that from coming over here? And he's like, well, I don't know. And he's like, well, stay on top of it. And I'm like, well, what was the point of that ridiculous dialogue? Well, the point was that for Americanized audiences, and or Shira or Honda was probably going, well, why should they care? Because, after all, it's the monster that ate Tokyo. Who cares? It's never coming to the United States. And they went to great pains to say, wait a minute, if it can happen to Tokyo, it can happen to you. So just keep that in mind.
And that's a good point, because to the United States audiences, the whole idea of this horror was lost.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had to do something to reintroduce the horror, and I don't think it works as a horror film in the Americanized version. It works as a monster film, but not as a horror film.
No,
whereas,
it doesn't work as a horror film. It's too far removed.
Whereas in the Japanese version, even after the Navy got to it, it still has elements of horror, and you still see it, and you see it in the people. You experience it as a film viewer.
There are more pictures of the children who were affected by the destruction, crying and screaming,
mm-hmm.
and things like that. Some of that stuff was taken out of the Americanized version.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's also just more dialogue about the potential ramifications of the secret weapon that Sarazawa was working on in his super secret lab. There's more discussion about his ambivalence in the Japanese version. It didn't make it to the American version.
Right.
And that was very interesting, too, because he brought up the beginnings of a really interesting... You know, he was like the classic ethical scientist. And I was sitting here watching the original, the 1954 version, going, oh, an ethical scientist, that seems like an unusual, that's something you don't see every day, Chauncey, you know, because in the movies they're never ethical. They're either evil or, you know, or just completely amoral, you know. But this guy really mm-hmm. cared about the impacts of his discoveries and what he was doing on mankind. And this weapon was something that could not... I mean, the idea was to destroy Godzilla. That was the point of the weapon. But there were also major ramifications that this weapon would have that this guy was thinking about. And then you had, like, the father of the only woman in Japan who was desirable, apparently. But anyway, the head scientist's father, she was his daughter. And anyway, this head scientist also wanted to study Godzilla. He's like, wait a minute, you know, instead of just destroying, why don't we take a step back and look at this quote-unquote monster and figure out what makes him tick, because there's a reason he survived all this radiation. There's a reason he survives fire and hydrogen testing. And if maybe we can figure out how he survives, maybe we can survive the next attack from the United States, the country that we will not mention.
Right.
How about
right.
that? And they're like, let's not. No, let's just get rid of it.
I think you're missing
a golden opportunity here.
You're making some awesome points. And all of this, interestingly enough, all of this stuff translates directly to the nuclear age, the atomic age, the air raid sirens we would hear in our youth. And having to memorize each one and what they all meant.
Yeah.
And somewhere in the back of our heads, if we had seen Godzilla, we think Godzilla. We think of this monster that is born or reborn in the atomic age. And,
mm-hmm.
and not only is he reborn, but now he's mad.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's not. He's just not a big lizard. He's mad. He's radioactive, and he breathes fire.
Right.
It's quite incredible. I'm going to shift it a little bit. I'd like to, if you'll allow me, to a few other monster movies of the atomic age. We have Greg. We have about 8 minutes left.
We have 10, but I wanted to mention something before you jump off of Godzilla. And switch to some of the other monsters. I wanted to mention a monster who is worth mentioning, especially since we're talking about Godzilla. What about Mothra?
Now, well, that's where I was going to next.
I never understood Mothra, so is that where we're going?
Yeah.
All right, go for it.
Well, go ahead. You start.
Okay. Now, I understand that it's really hard, especially lately, these days, when we have so many great effects out there. But I really enjoyed Godzilla as a child growing up. And I always enjoyed the fights that he had, especially the King Kong fight. I thought that was cool. But I never truly got into this giant, humongous moth creature that was beating up my hero, Godzilla. And so that was a little hard for me to take. Not only because of the monster as a monster, but it seems to me it could have been a much more ferocious monster, and it doesn't seem like he should be being dealt with like he was throughout most of those films with this giant moth. But, you know, that's just me. That's one guy's opinion. So tell me about Mothra. We've got about 9 minutes now, even.
Well, I don't want to spend 9 minutes, but a couple of minutes is important. Yeah, Mothra is important for a couple of reasons. First of all, it was done in color, and it was important to see this moth, this big, colorful thing coming out, and I think that probably had something to do with why they made the movie the way they did. But it also had directly to do with atomic. I'm saying nuclear, and I have to say atomic radiation,
right.
and how suddenly something just grows out of proportion, out of control, and now it becomes something else, something that's outside of our understanding. And this is where Mothra comes from.
When was this movie done?
It was released in 1961.
Okay.
It also features two tiny little girls. They're twins. And they seem to be demigods, and they can call Mothra, and they can say, don't worry, to Mothra, and they also come to warn the people, saying, if you do this, Mothra's going to come, I'm going to tell you. And they sing, and throughout their songs, they connect with Mothra. This one, like the others, the United States Navy had a strong hand on it, but it didn't lose, you know, hours of film after the U.S. Navy got a hold of it. Until a certain point, much later on, any of these movies that came out of Japan, the U.S. Navy had a strong hand in editing the film.
Which I find odd for a movie that was released in Japan. I mean, like, well, the original, like the 1954 version of Godzilla was released in Japan first. Why would the United States Navy, unless it was still an occupying force, which I don't remember it being.
It was early
it
on.
It was.
In 1954, yeah.
Right into the 50s, right.
Wow.
I didn't think
it was there that long.
Yeah. And remember, too, anything that the United States Navy felt would undermine their plan for Japan was given a very short leash.
Yeah.
So other films.
Before you shift, Larry. I mean,
yeah.
If we're moving off of Mothra, one thing that I would like to try to touch base on briefly is just how Godzilla sort of evolved, because Godzilla went from this angry radiation spewing monster of 1954 to like some good guy by
the '70s
and what was up with that?
Why did we make friends
with Godzilla?
Well, we're going to get to that in a moment because that's real important. There are two other important films that came out. I want to mention quickly before we go back to that. One is The Attack of the 50-Foot Woman. But even though this one was a space alien film, it still came out in 1958. It came out at the very beginning of the space race, but it also had the whole implication of because of the atomic stuff happening in the United in the United States, there was an alien visitor watching us, and he affects this woman, and she becomes a 50-foot-tall woman. And then another movie, also classic, Them, 1954.
Oh, I hate that movie.
This was a direct story dealing with atomic testing in New Mexico, and it caused common ants to mutate, growing into these giant man-eating things. Stars James Whitmore. I've met James Whitmore. I've talked to James Whitmore about this film and making of this film, and I can tell you that everyone on that set took it so seriously, the implications. They actually thought that the U.S. government would shut them down.
Wow.
While they're making this film, because of this, they were filming right in an area where there was atomic testing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of interesting. Again, the movie is about the paranoia and the not understanding what's going to happen now that we've released this beast called the atom into the not just the vernacular, but into everyday society.
So why did we make friends with Godzilla?
Well, that is important. You see, we had to make nice to him.
Why?
Because we were making nice with nuclear power. We were starting to make nuclear plants, and we were trying to make nuclear things friendly. So Godzilla turns to be the good guy, and now the other monsters that come from outer space or the deep sea or a volcano, they're all the bad guys now.
Interesting. Very interesting.
And we always look at the situation where art imitates life or vice versa. Well, we have that situation here with Godzilla especially and with the other monsters. And although we don't say what those monsters are and what they really reflect, we do see it in how the directors and the storylines actually portray what's going on indirectly. But we can see that, like Larry aforementioned, the friendlier situation for a friendlier situation. So, very good. We've got about 2 minutes left here, you guys. Any other comments about my favorite of my childhood, Godzilla?
I just want to say that these movies, though they appear to be dumb and stupid, are actually important in the filmography of our lives, and they make a strong statement as to what was going on in the era in which they were created.
I want to echo that too. I think it is important. And if you can watch the original Japanese version, because of its point of view, which is far more personal, it's extremely interesting. And just remember the context. Japan had just survived two nuclear blasts, the only country in the world that has been the subject of an atomic bomb blast. And so in 1954, when this movie was made, it was made by people who were around or knew people who had been blown up by these bombs or who were experiencing after effects of this. It was very much front of mind for the Japanese people. What do we do with this horrible force that has been leashed upon us? We still don't know. That's the beginning of the context for Godzilla, and it's unique, very unique from a filmmaking perspective, even though in 21st century terms the effects look a little cheesy. For 1954, they were pretty freaking good, and just very, it's a very poignant film. It really is.
Most definitely. Last thing I want to say is the bombing of Hiroshima is very important to me. I didn't know this, but I found out later that they bombed Hiroshima on my birthday. Crazy, huh? Well, ladies and gentlemen,
once again,
thanks
comes
for
back
listening
to, you,
to us.
Doesn't it, Greg?
Thanks for listening to us here on A Real Point of View. We hope that you join us again next time and next week for our Monsters in the Shadows. Thanks again for listening, and check out our archives. And you guys have a nice night, and make sure you go out and see a movie or bring one home. Take care, everybody. Good night.